Morning, Your Honor.
Are you ready to proceed?
Yes, I am.
Then let's begin.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the Court. Superior Industries appellant here today appeals from the District Court's construction of various claim terms that relate to two distinct families of patents that are directed to relatively straightforward mechanical inventions. So I'm not going to go into any detail of the workings of these inventions. It's fully laid out in our briefs. Superior maintains that the...
Counsel, let me ask you, just as a preliminary question, make sure that at least I'm on the same page. I'm looking at your plaintiff's memorandum in support of your motion for summary judgment. And you say in the background part, this is on page 2, I don't have available but I'll get here soon, the appendix number, but it says that after issuance of the 482 patent, Masala has made and sold only a fifth version of the truck loader, totally eliminated the frame structure under the folding ramps between the drive-on ramp and the mainframe. So I'd like to understand that the accused patent doesn't have the frame structure under the folding ramps?
It depends, Your Honor. There's multiple versions of truck unloaders that the defendant has made. So some have some sort of structure, some have less structure.
I thought they stopped having a support structure for E and F, the models.
That may be correct. In some later versions, they ceased having the
pull. There's a hydraulic lift of sort of thing that sort of props it up, but then there's no structure underneath that.
There is some structure at the end, but there's
but
no
the structure,
side
the
frame structure.
Just hooks up to the steel plate.
That's correct. But that framing structure, anyhow, did change.
I don't know whether you're familiar with our precedent called Jang against Boston Scientific. It's a case like this one in which a whole number of claim terms were served up on appeal for construction. And it was unclear to the panel which of the claim terms were actually necessary to decide to sustain the non-infringement, because like here, in that case, the district court hadn't given us an opinion that explained to us why there would be not infringement under the claim constructions rendered by the district judge, but there would be infringement under the claim construction proposed by you. For example, if you take the undercarriage patents, what you're dealing there is a channel beam. And the assertion by your adversary in its motion for summary judgment is, we don't have a channel beam. We don't have one, period. And so it doesn't make any difference whether it has three sides or four sides. We don't have one.
I don't think that's quite right, Your Honor. They do have a channel beam.
We don't have any way of knowing.
You've
given us no context whatsoever.
Their assertion is that they don't have a channel beam. It's written in the piece of paper that they submitted to Judge Donovan. Right. And so what I'm asking is, well, why should we be troubling ourselves with whether they're three sides or four sides when we aren't even sure that it makes a difference? And the same thing is true with regard to the structure to which Judge Raina just referred to a moment ago, which is your support frame. And if they've got a device that doesn't have a support frame, who cares whether it's holding up earth or not? Who cares what it's doing? Because an exist pod doesn't have it. So can you tell us, I mean, for example, which of these terms are absolutely necessary for us to construe in order to sustain your point of view, which is that there would be infringement if we were on your side?
I believe the reason that these terms are before this court for reconsideration on claim construction is because they are all relevant to at least one alleged infringing device. The devices have changed over time. In some cases, the later versions in case of the truck unloaders, where they eliminated that support frame, they're not relevant. They are relevant to the earlier
devices. Right, but they've never used an earthen ramp.
That's correct, and that's another point of contention in the claim constructions.
So why does it matter in viewing the court's claim construction? Why are we so focused on the earthen ramp when it's really not at issue, is it?
Well, we don't believe it is to be an issue. We believe, Your Honor, that the proper construction of these claim terms if the earthen ramp is not a positively recited feature of the claims. What's recited there is environment.
It's irrelevant in relative to the accused pens.
How the frame structure is configured is relevant in the definition of how that.
But a lot of your arguments based on this notion of the earthen ramp, and it seems to me that the accused apparatuses don't use an earthen ramp.
That's right. And we
so
don't
why are we arguing about that today? Why is that relevant?
I think it's relevant because that's a position that the defendants have taken to try to impute an earthen ramp as a requirement of the claims, and we don't believe it is. And so the fact that they have or do not have an earthen ramp.
15 of the 529 does recite an earthen ramp, doesn't it?
It's there in a sense of describing an environment that the end frame member has to be configured to deal with. So it's only there to give context of what the end frame member structure has to be. It's configured to hold back an earthen ramp, but it's not requiring in the first instance that an earthen ramp is present for infringement to be determined. But there has to be an end frame member in that sense that is capable of at least dealing with an earthen ramp if it's there. So we don't contend it's part of the claims at all. And yet defendants have tried to impute or insert, and successfully have done so with the district court, that the earthen ramp is a required element of the claims, and we don't believe it is.
This is so even though the purpose of the invention was to find a way to have the use of an earthen ramp with less earth than had been used before.
That was one aspect, Your Honor. That was one beneficial aspect, yes.
You don't want to be limited to an earthen ramp. You want to have the ability in the future, I guess, to use a metal ramp or something else, but you don't claim a metal ramp.
We don't claim a metal ramp, and we don't claim an earthen ramp. In
the 943 patent, which is the parent of the 529 patent, speaks specifically about an earthen ramp.
Claims before me here. Again, I believe that the earthen ramp
configured
there
to support the end of an earthen ramp.
Right, configured to support an earthen ramp, but the earthen ramp isn't required as a,
it's designed, configured.
That's right.
We interpret that to mean that it's designed to support an earthen ramp.
It has a structure which makes it capable of holding back earthen material. And a structure that is capable of holding back earthen material is likely also capable of holding back other material. It's to prevent movement of the end of the
drive on ramp. So if the 943 pen is configured to support earthen material, then why is it that in the 529 pen, when the district court uses a barrier for supporting an earthen ramp, why is that erroneous?
It's because in one sense it is specifically designed or required for that purpose, and we don't believe that is in purpose. Is the goal. The goal is, what does the structure look like?
The frame member of the models that are now being sold are not designed to configure to support an earthen ramp, correct? Basically, there were three models, A, B, and C, and I were able to get, by going back to the district court, the copies of the various models. A, B, and C, there was only one model per model made. A was sold in 2009. And then when they get down to D and E, which are the models, D, there was only one, and then E is the model that I think they're now offering for sale. And E has got no structure in the frame at all for holding up earthen ramp.
It doesn't have the complete support.
Well, no, if you look at it, there's a little hook on the end of the metal ramp that slides down into a slot that comes down from the piece that's lifts up and goes
correct
down.
We don't dispute that it was changed to avoid the side. Basically, it was a U-shaped frame as it started out, and they eliminated the side.
Would you concede that there's no doctrine of equivalence issue here, as I understand it? It was never pled, so it's only
not with
literally
the elimination of the side frame member.
So if the frame member of the, what I'll call the model Fs now, There are only three models other than that, one, two, three of them, which would be limited damages, I would think. So that frame, they do not have any structure for supporting earth in F. So
right,
and it can't be infringement, right?
That's correct. And so the patents aren't asserted against, we have asserted patents against specific embodiments.
The drawing that shows how it hooks, this is the piece that lifts up, slides down into a little notch right here, and you simply have a straight piece. So there's the whole limit, all the limitations that have to do with the support structure seem to me to be totally irrelevant to Model F. So I wouldn't be worrying myself with construing those terms, which is difficult.
Right. They're there because of an earlier embodiment that has those features.
Well, there are three models that have been sold. One, two, three. So, and they, you believe they had, those models had some support for earth?
Yeah, well, they had a structure that would be capable.
I mean, it would have been so helpful to me if the district court opinion had gone through their basically five models, A, B, C, and D, and then E, and explain to me why it's important for us to interpret these various claims for infringement purposes with regard to each of the models.
And, Your Honor, to be clear, if this is not just about the models in question, because obviously if there's not a proper claim construction, there would be nothing from preventing.
But how do you get a proper claim construction without context? You give us no context, how can we construe meaning?
I think there's never a requirement that the context includes the alleged infringing device.
There is absolutely a requirement that you give us enough context to construe. And we have said over and over in our opinions that there's great value in at least showing enough so we know that we're not giving advisory opinions. Which is questionable under Article 3 practice.
All I can say is, Your Honor, is to address...
You don't construe it in light of the accused device because there could be validity issues. Are there validity issues in this case?
Well, validity has certainly been raised
parked.
As a defense.
Yeah, they've been parked.
But, okay.
I mean, for example, in the case that I was citing to Jang against Boston Scientific... The court said, well, in this setting where there are lots of claim limitations and it's difficult. I mean, for example, it's not an easy question in my mind to decide here whether or not the earthen stuff is necessarily included. So what we said in Jang was there are two problems. One is we might be giving an advisory opinion on a claim limitation that we don't have to, which is something courts aren't supposed to do. And secondly, in the words of that opinion, from the stipulated judgment, it's impossible for us to be able to see. There's no context being given. The stipulated provides no factual context for the claim construction issues presented by the party. I think that's what the chief judge was referring to.
Would you like to save your rebuttal time?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, Tim Shattuck on behalf of Masaba, Inc.
How can these claim constructions possibly be correct when they miss one of the first points I make in any patent law class, which is that when you have a product or structure claim, you get it for all uses, for all functions, for all intended purposes. And yet this structure, whether it's a C channel or a ramp, the district court goes on to add for supporting an earthen ramp or to substantially surround, lists a purpose and a reason for the structure, which is exactly opposite to the fundamental principle that a structural claim gets all uses and functions and purposes. Your response?
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the channel beam, for instance, I'll take that one first.
No, just address the principle. Can it possibly be correct to include function, purpose, intended uses when any patent lawyer, and I'm sure our
esteemed counsel in front of us would agree, know that you get all uses and purposes of a structure.
Well, in this case, the specifications define the purpose of the structure. It's not the purpose, but it's how it's configured. For instance, the channel beam...
So you can define that configuration. You can't limit it to a purpose. Too substantially this, for substantially that.
Because the patents specifically say that it's configured to substantially surround all four sides of the respective beam it's engaged with. So,
but that doesn't limit you to a purpose.
Correct.
That's what they read. They read in a purpose that it has to accommodate an earthen ramp.
But isn't the point
moving back,
if you look at the unloader patents, certainly are all directed to dealing with the earthen ramp.
Right.
But I think I understood your argument on the channel beam to be that the channel beam, because the patentee chose, and I think as the parties agreed and as the district court said and the law says, we're supposed to construe this channel beam evenly across the two patents.
Correct, Your Honor.
And in one of the patents, they say substantially surround the beam in order to have a slot. And so you say to yourself, oh my goodness, substantially surround, is that a term of art that one knows? What do they mean by substantially surround? So you say, I've got to find a definition. That's the way I understood your argument, was that in distinction between the unloader patents and the other patent.
There's two things with the channel beam. Both patents say in multiple places that it is configured to substantially surround all four sides of the beam.
And that's claim language. That's not spec stuff. That's in the claim.
In some claims, it's there.
It's in one of the claims.
Right. It's in one of the claims, and it's in the spec, too. And also, it talks about how there has to be a
fourth. If it's not in other claims, does that give you a problem?
Not if it's construed as it's been construed in light of the specification.
How do you deal then with the claim differentiation arguments, looking at the sheets, the C-shaped limitation, for instance? We have a claim differentiation problem because claims 5 and 6 do discuss fourth and fifth walls.
Right. Because claim 1, all it requires is that the channel beam have three sides, because comprised of three sides, the two top and bottom being parallel. It doesn't say anything.
Does claim 1 say three sides?
It says comprised of sides 1, 2, and 3.
Which could be...
Doesn't preclude a fourth side, which...
Doesn't preclude a fourth side, yes. And then the fifth and fourth and fifth walls are discussed in claims 5 and 6. How do you deal with that?
So one, claim 1, you could have this configuration as depicted here. You could also have a separate configuration where you just have the slot coming up with the bottom. Or you could have a third configuration where it comes down from the top to create the slot. 5 says... You have this particular configuration with just the fourth wall coming down from the top. 6 says you have both the top and the bottom slot. So 1 doesn't say how...
I'm trying to figure out how you limit the broader independent claim to only to how you construe that in light of the specific limitations in the dependent claims, which includes other walls.
I don't follow the question, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Claim differentiation.
Right. Yeah.
When you have a dependent claim that lists additional limitations, you perceive that they are not part of the independent claim, which does not include those limitations. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a dependent claim in the first place.
And claim 1, there are no limitations as to how the fourth wall is configured.
It can be configured in a number of different ways.
Right, like I said, it could be configured with just coming down from the top. You could have the top and the bottom, fourth and a fifth side, or you could have the bottom.
And claims 5 and 6 specifically say how it is configured.
Right, this is claim 5, this is claim 6. Where claim 1 is this.
Claim 1 covers all ways in which to have a fourth wall.
You could have this coming at it.
It's in your red brief, I believe.
And then also on the channel beams, there's the argument where in the abstract and the summary of invention, it says there has to be a perimeter wall. There has to be this
before a perimeter wall with a slot in it adjacent to the facing surface of the beam of the first fret section. If you don't have this, to have a perimeter wall adjacent to the facing surface of the first fret section with a slot in it, you have to have a partial fourth side. Because otherwise you wouldn't have this perimeter wall, which the patent says both in the summary of invention and in the abstract is part of the present invention, the overall invention. So that's why we believe it's not that there's, it doesn't say the purpose of anything, Your Honor. It just says.
So what's interested me is that you're showing that particular drawing. That drawing reads on claim 6 because it's got 5 sides. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, right? And so all of the drawings that are in the patent show one with a slot being formed by a lip on both sides, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So it's sort of interesting to me that your preferred embodiment becomes a preferred embodiment for a dependent claim.
That is interesting. This is actual.
Well, what am I supposed to do with it? I mean, besides being interested, it's the first time I've seen that happen.
This is actual. This drawing is a photograph of the device manufactured by Superior. You're right. This is a preferred embodiment because it's taken exactly from a photograph of Superior's device. Should I move to the unloader? Here's how I would.
Well, what's your take on the discussion that substantially occupied the appellant's argument time, which was, what are we supposed to do with this? I mean, are you really going to stand here and tell me that your product has no channel beam?
Yes.
Well, if it has no channel beam, then why do I care whether it has 3 sides or 4 sides?
Well, Your Honor, we made our motion for summary judgment making that argument that we didn't have any infringement. And one of the reasons we made it, I mean, I don't want to go back down. I'd like to get it all resolved here. But it was our position in the district court, and that's why we filed our motion for summary judgment, that we needed to get context into the appeal and explain at least in light of
other your summary judgment motion papers purport to supply some type of context by talking about accused structure to the patent and whatnot.
Right.
But with all due respect, I don't know that you're telling the truth or not. I mean, that's what a U.S. district court judge is for down below when he hears your arguments, and then he decides, you know, he either accepts your framing of the context or he rejects it.
I think as it was postured, though, the judge had construed the claims, and once he construed the claims, if he would have analyzed it, he would have, as Superior did, just found that there was no infringement. He probably wouldn't have gone to the next step and said, well, even if Superior's right.
He goes that way on the unloader patents because he's convinced that earth and ramp is required throughout. But if one followed the suggestion from the chief judge that we reject that, then the patentee's back in play, right?
Right.
On the unloader patents, which I think you do draw a sharp distinction between the unloader patents and the patents that deal with the extending arm, right?
It's our view, Honor, that if you read all of the unloader patents in their entirety, that what Superior invented and it's based on is that with respect to the invention, there is this ramp and then there's the support frame. Now, we don't claim that the earthen ramp is part of all the claims. What our claims say, based on what the patent has made clear, or what our position is, based on what the patent has made clear, is that the support frame is there to support the earthen ramp. And it says that, you know, twice in the patent, that the primary function of the support frame is to serve as a barrier for supporting an earthen ramp.
Well, if necessary. As the chief judge was saying, well, you know, so you figured out a way to do it without an earthen ramp. The structure would be there to support an earthen ramp if you wanted to have one. So, I mean, it seems to me that you have some real vulnerability on the way the district court looked at the undercarriage patents as requiring this presence of the earthen ramp.
I don't.
They said the drive-on ramp has to be earthen, for example.
He did say that the drive-on ramp is earthen ramp because that's what the invention was. It wasn't this structure was only invented, or part of the invention was to support an earthen ramp. That's the principal purpose. So we wouldn't have this, for instance, it's our position that none of our models, A through E, have a support structure or a support frame. The earlier ones had a couple of alignment tubes, But they were not there to support an earthen ramp. They were not there to do anything other than to keep things in alignment. We've never had an earthen ramp, so why would we have a support frame whose primary purpose is to support an earthen ramp? What Superior, all of our models have a steel ramp. We do not use an earthen ramp.
I understand that.
And Superior has argued that these alignment tubes that run under some of the earlier models could be a support frame. So we've tried to avoid that argument. We think we would ultimately prevail on it, but...
Well, your Model F doesn't, the part that's pictured blue down there,
yeah.
Your Model F doesn't have anything remotely approximating right. that.
Well,
right?
Yeah, and none of our, yes, correct.
Well, your earlier models do have a structure upon which the declining ramp sits.
It doesn't rest on it or support it. There are some tubes under some of them that they thought maybe necessary to keep everything in alignment. This with
that's
the
right.
steel ramp.
It's not there to support Earth.
Not there to support Earth, and it's not there to support the pivoting ramp either. Our pivoting ramp rests.
But how do we know that?
Because the discovery has been done.
Let me return to another point that my colleague Judge Clevenger made earlier. Is there anything in the record that supports your allegation that there's no channel in that you don't have a channel beam? Was that fact finding conducted below?
There.
Anything in the record? Show us where in the record you don't have a channel beam.
We have provided the court with the motion for summary judgment papers and our client's affidavit that have pictures of our accused device and drawings. And what you can see from that, Your Honor, is that we use tubes on
the FS. We have to see it. Was there fact-finding made?
Not by the district court.
How can we review a decision that wasn't made?
Because the judge construed the claims as he thought correct, and then he made a then we moved the court for summary judgment based on that for a specific finding that we did not infringe any of the claims as properly construed by Chief Judge Frank or by Judge Frank, and Superior then filed its own motion of non-infringement.
Yeah, to move from that point, you're showing us a lot of things by pointing to visual aids. Where is all that information in the record? And you're just going to say, well, you have to see it yourself on the patent figures and the other information you've asserted?
It's not my position. It's not my obligation to show that our device infringes. It's plaintiff's obligation to show that. So
well,
it wasn't my obligation to put that.
It's your obligation to show that you don't infringe.
Right.
He's trying to show you do infringe. Your obligation is to say, well, Your Honor, here's the reason why we don't infringe under your claim.
And we're the ones who put in the record what's there that shows we don't infringe. If they wanted to
but
put in something
else.
But
what we need is the claim construction. And that's where we're having trouble. The claim construction that we have is mostly in functional terms, and those functional terms, besides being irrelevant, are not in the claim, and I'm having great trouble reading structure out of the function.
I think they're structural, Your Honor. I mean, the channel being...
How do I know what is a barrier that supports an earthen ramp? What does that mean?
If it's the evidence shows that...
Is that an incline barrier? Is it a concave barrier, convex? Is it a sloping? Is it an inverted?
Doesn't it depend on what kind of earthen barrier you have? If your earthen barrier is only 2 inches, 3 inches tall, it'll take a different kind of structure to hold it back.
Well, the earthen... It has to be true, but it has to be taller than that.
Is supporting the same as holding it back?
Well, the patents talk about that the purpose is to keep it in shape and
purpose. Looking for structure, not purposes. They get all purposes.
But in this case, they've specified in the patent disclosed that it says the purpose is to serve as a barrier for supporting an earthen ramp.
And we don't read those things out of the specification into the claims, particularly when it's a structural patent. But let's hear from your...
Thank you, Your Honor. Colleague.
Your Honor, we wouldn't be here today if we thought that a channel beam construed as we proposed didn't cover their Masaba's devices, all of them, all the undercarriage devices at issue. We wouldn't be here today. It wouldn't be an issue. I'm not going to waste the court's time. I'm not going to waste my client's resources on appealing a claim term that, if it's reversed, puts us in a position where there's nothing to assert. We believe that the claim term for channel beam properly construed does cover what the defendants make. So there's a dispute. I understand this is
so
not something that gets resolved.
You say the channel beam has three sides, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That's kind of a what I wanted to say about these claims is that these are relatively simple terms.
Why is it that their tube structure has three sides? It looked to me like what they were doing is if you think of a ladder and then sliding a ladder up inside. It looks to me like what they were doing is simply taking the base ladder, which whose two sides are wider, and taking the ladder they push up and pushing it inside and just sliding it up. They weren't sliding it in a channel. They were just sliding it up.
The version that defendants have spent most of their time showing to the court today, it characterizes a preferred embodiment. It's actually an embodiment. It's not the preferred embodiment. It's one embodiment. And this court has said, you're not limited in your language just because you have a single embodiment that's disclosed. So there's no prerequisite here that we narrow our claims to only cover one embodiment. The claims, in fact, if you look at them, these simple...
But if their point is that their beam doesn't have three sides, it's four sides, it's a piece of uniform like a rectangle on each side and just slides up. And it's not using it. It doesn't have a problem of having a notch to allow the supports to come through it because their notches are laid on top. Their supports.
The patents at issue don't talk about a notch. It refer to notch and opening as the same because
one of the claim requires a slot.
Slot and opening, we believe, are synonymous. The claim language, it has to be viewed in the context of a specification that says that opening can be any size it needs to be to accommodate the cross bracing that is placed on the upper support beams. So one embodiment is disclosed with a narrower cross support.
Slot wasn't construed, correct?
Slot was construed, Your Honor. It was construed in the context of a fourth partial sidewall being attached to this C-shaped cavity.
You wouldn't have a slot if you didn't have a fourth wall.
You would have a slot or an opening in the channel. We believe those are synonymous. Again, the claim language talks in terms, not in every case of slot. They would talk about elongate opening. We believe these are simple structures. The context of the claims that defines two C-shaped channel beams with openings that face one another, comprised the first, second, and third sidewalls, and then particularly calling out...
Do you have a final thought for us here?
Just, Your Honor, that... There's been no clear redefinition of any of these terms in the specification. The claims on their face have plenty of context to understand these claim terms. The Thorner requirement that there be a clear and explicit disclaimer or a clear and explicit redefinition has nowhere been found by the court, by the lower district court, or urged by opposing counsel. So,
thank you.
Thank you.